We never make, obviously, bad decisions. Like, every single decision seems rational in the moment. But there is, like, a certain trend. And the one thing that keeps biting me is ignoring complexity for too long. Eventually, I self-correct and I just realize, hey, the business is getting more complicated. Product is getting more complicated. The way we sell is getting more complicated. And every time I kind of catch myself, like, I should have thought about this 6 months ago. Now it's too complicated. So letting complexity creep in is just awful. Just don't do that.
Welcome to the SaaS Revolution Show, a podcast by SaaSDoc. Here we interview SaaS founders from around the world who've been there and done that. They share the ins and outs of how they built their businesses, their operations, their path to securing investment, and more. Our mission with the podcast is to help you, the founder, learn how to scale your SaaS, maintain your well-being, and navigate the complexities of this ever-changing industry. I'm your host, Alex Dima, and together we'll explore the good, the bad, and the ugly in the journey to SaaS success.
Okay, welcome to the SaaS Revolution Show. I'm your host, Alex Huma, CEO and founder of SaaSDoc. Delighted to be joined today by Ev Consovoy, who is the CEO of Teleport. Welcome, Ev. How's it going?
Great to be here.
Good to have you on the podcast. Where's your studio? Where are you calling in from?
I'm joining you from Oakland, California.
Oakland, California. Okay, that's just over the bridge from San Francisco, right? I mean, geography correct.
So, West Coast, Brooklyn.
Yeah, very good. How long have you been in Oakland?
Been here about 5-7 years now, actually.
Okay, very nice. And is it home now?
I think so. There's been San Francisco is not a huge space, and as the tech continues to grow, we've been kind of expanding outside of the epicenter of tech. So Oakland is one of the locations where startup started to go to a few years ago, and there are quite a few of us now here. Yep.
Okay. Very good. Good stuff. Well, look, I'd love to start the show just to getting to know our guests a little bit more. So I won't buck the trend. Would love to know, who is Ev Consovoy?
Ev Consovoy is a software engineer who really likes hardware as well. So when I was in high school, I was kind of trying to decide, do I want to go into aerospace engineering or electrical engineering? But got access to some pretty good computers at the early age, and it was pretty clear to me that software engineer is what I need to do.
Okay. And how long have you been a software engineer?
Well, I want to say since probably 13, maybe 14 years old. got my first paying gig when I was finishing high school, so it was really, really challenging for me to go to college because it kind of seemed almost pointless at the time. I felt like, well, I already know how to code. I'm a pretty amazing programmer with very high opinion of myself back then. But actually going to college and getting exposure to all kinds of bright minds, like it allows you to recalibrate and you, I guess, become less cocky about your abilities. So.
And did you get a job in software engineering after college, or did you go straight into becoming an entrepreneur?
No, when I graduated, I was entrepreneurship was not on my mind at all. I was just primarily interested on doing something cool, something that feels like I'm not working, something that you can naturally attract it to. And I always, for whatever reason, loved building tools. So my first job out of college, it was just an accident, it was a company called National Instruments, which was it's kind of cool squared because company itself was building virtual instruments for other engineers in all kinds of era fields like electrical engineering, petroleum engineering. So at the National Instruments, we were making virtual instruments. But I was also in a tooling group internally. So I was building tools for people who build tools for engineers. And after a while, I decided to see what other opportunities are out there. It's like I think I spent 4 years at a college at NI. And then I realized there's just not a lot of interesting companies that make tools. And I really, really wanted to make tools for the engineers. And then I just realized one day that if I want to work on something cool, I need to decide what that is for myself. And that's kind of what led me to entrepreneurship. I really wanted to work on things I wanted to work on.
How old were you then when you decided to found Teleport? Which I believe you said yesterday wasn't perhaps the original name, but I guess the founding of the company. How old were you? And then I guess go into the founding story. Why did you decide to build this business?
Well, Teleport is my first company, actually. So when I realized that I want to start a company that will dedicate itself to building tools for engineers, I think I was about maybe 28 years old, 28, 29. And the company I started back then was Mailgun, so Mailgun.com. It was in the kind of beginning of this cloud revolution where companies were moving more and more of their workloads to cloud providers like AWS. And back then, AWS was the game in town. And a bunch of tools that were absent. So one of them was scalable delivery of email messages for web applications. You know, when web applications send and receive emails, like that's actually not easy to do. And so I started that company at the time. So I was in New York City, and I was working out of this co-working space, and I saw there was just a lot of startups there. And one of the challenges they all had was that kind of email delivery, like how do we actually programmatically send and receive emails? And that's how the first company got started. It got moved to California, got funded by Y Combinator, which is a pretty well-known accelerator here in the States. And after a few years, we kind of sold the company to Rackspace, which was the second biggest cloud provider. I was very excited about this at the time because I was really worried that AWS will become like a monopoly in the cloud. Because I spent first half of my career during like Microsoft-Intel duopoly, where like the Windows was kind of the only platform you could think of. So I really didn't want to be in the same world again. So I wanted more competition and variety. So joining Rackspace was a very exciting time. And also it was kind of an eye-opening time because now I was working at the second biggest cloud provider. And subsequently I had access to all kinds of users of cloud computing. First of all, customers, companies that hosted their applications on Rackspace, but also because it was one of the very few choices in the cloud. So I would get to meet organizations that had massive AWS presence and they were maybe looking to expand or have some alternative vendor. And I got to see like the pain that a lot of them live in. And that's kind of what led to creation of Teleport.
Okay, and if you don't mind me asking, was that the sale of the first business to Rackspace, was this a life-changing event? Did it, you know, provide financial freedom to yourself?
Absolutely, especially for someone moving from the kind of former Soviet Union environment. Like, to me, even like relocating to the United States was already a huge kind of life-changing event, not only because obviously, back in the 90s, like former Soviet Union was a pretty sad state to be, but also kind of being surrounded by world's like basically best talent in computer science, that was also like a huge, huge jump. And yes, obviously, selling Mailgun was kind of continuation of that very same trajectory.
Hi, everyone. Alex here. I was in Austin last week for a great few days at my friend Nathan Lacker's SaaS Open event. And let me tell you, it really is dubbed the Silicon Hills for a reason. Networking with some epic SaaS masterminds in the heart of Austin has me raring and ready to go back next month for SaaSOP USA on the 13th to the 15th of May. For listeners who already have their ticket, DM me on LinkedIn and let's get coffee in the diary. For those of you who don't, you're forgiven. Assuming you'll still make it, you've got to be there, 1,500 SaaS founders, execs, investors. If you're looking to raise, it's going to be the place to be. If you're looking to check out the US market and Austin, it's going to be the place to be. Learning from the best, with so many great speakers. It's going to be a great fun-filled SaaS.com event with a lot of bang for your buck. So if you want to get 20% off the code, if you haven't already got your ticket, use the code SaaSREV, that's S-A-A-S-R-E-V. Let's light up the streets of Austin and have a great time in May.
And so obviously you decided to go again and you still continue to be an entrepreneur, build a new business. Tell us a little bit about that. So obviously, I think from what I heard, you saw a problem whilst working in Rackspace, which kind of led to then what is now Teleport. Tell us a little bit about why you decided to build this, decided to go again and build a new business.
So there may be two reasons. I'll start with maybe not overly obvious one. So when I was at Rackspace, I would sometimes interact with Rackspace founders or Rackspace executives from the early days. And I was It was also during the time where there was the presidential elections going on in the United States, where like everyone was preparing, and I remember how many people were frustrated and scared, like, what if this guy becomes president or that guy becomes president? And I noticed that like Rackspace founders, they were not stressed, not as much as the rest of the world. And it occurred to me, like, the reason they were maybe less stressed is because if you start a company, you're going to naturally surround yourself with people who are similar to you, who share your values, who behave in a certain way that makes your personal existence more pleasant. And Rackspace at the time was a fairly large company. I believe we had like 5,000 employees or something. So essentially, these people lived in a bubble, and it was a really pleasant bubble for them to be in, because, as I said, like, they were basically surrounded by people that they liked. So in such environment, even though, of course, it's important who becomes president of the country you live in, but it's somewhat less important. It's not affecting you like day to day as much. And I wanted that as well. Like, I wanted to be surrounded by people who dream about similar things I dream, who work the same way I work, who laugh at the same jokes I laugh. So that was extremely important motivator for me, because it's kind of like creating like a bubble for yourself so you could be comfortable for the rest of your life.
Yeah,
and
I like that.
And the second reason is because it's really hard. I do have like itchy hands. I think I'm a builder. I grew up in a family of engineers. My dad's an engineer, mom's an engineer, and I was what, like 30, 33, maybe 34 at the time. So it was like, no, I don't want to retire. I want to build something. And I could clearly see that cloud technology, like cloud computing, is still in the super early days. In fact, I believe right now it's extremely in the early days. We have so much tech that just absent that needs to be built, absolutely. And we can talk about what that means if you want. So I just couldn't unsee all these problems. Like, it was it was just exciting for me. So that's why I decided to start a second company.
And what is Teleport? What does it do? And like, any data you can share about the company to kind of paint a picture?
Sure. Teleport provides secure access to computing environments. We all know that internet runs in data centers, but engineers physically are not in data centers. But engineers' job is to tell internet what to do, right? So engineers building applications that need to run in these data centers. For that, they need remote access into these environments, into AWS environments, GCP environments, their own data centers, Internet of Things platforms, all of those. And Teleport is, I'm pretty proud of, and I will say that, Teleport is the best way to do it. If you have the budget, come to us and we'll sell you an enterprise solution that will make you and your engineers extremely happy. If you don't have the money, or if you're too small, we have an open source solution that's actually pretty good. That's what we do.
Awesome. And you're venture-backed, right? Because I know you're speaking at SaaS.USA together with Mary D'Onofrio from Bessemer Venture Partners. So I'm assuming, although I didn't check, that Mary or Bessemer are one of your investors. Can you tell us perhaps like how many rounds of venture that you've raised and maybe how much?
Sure. So Teleport, yes, we are venture funded. Our Series A was led by Kleiner Perkins, which is like a fund that I've been watching since I was a teenager. Because these guys funded everything from like Google and Amazon and stuff. So then we did Series B, also led by Kleiner Perkins. And then Series C was led by Bessemer Venture Partners with Insight Venture Partners participating. So now I have four wonderful investors that sit on my board and help me run the company.
Very stellar, the top tier names there. So congrats on that. We spoke yesterday actually, and I was going to ask a question about the first year sort of story, building Teleport in the first year. But I think really from that conversation, obviously, we got a bit more depth into what that first year looked like, because like you said, there was two products. And I think it makes sense just to perhaps sort of go straight into this and talk about, from the beginning, but maybe why you had two products and really then what happened as to get to where you are sort of like today. Which is a one product company. I know you have the open source product, so I mean, you could say it's two, but let's assume it, call it a one product company. So tell us a little bit about that. So like you've launched the business and but within the first year, you've found that you had two products. Did you launch with the mind that you would have two products?
No. Actually, maybe to answer this question fully, I need to actually go through the process of launching Teleport. And what was that problem that I saw that I just couldn't unsee? So when I was at Rackspace, I would meet with just major users of cloud computing, organizations that had visible brands and very successful businesses, SaaS businesses. I don't want to mention who they were. I don't think it matters. But they were large and they were modern, sophisticated, like good R&D teams, smart engineers. And talking to them, I would always notice that their DevOps teams, they would grow faster than the rest of engineering. And if you think about it, that might not necessarily be a good thing, because DevOps teams, first of all, they're incredibly hard to assemble and build and maintain, because it requires a lot of expertise, infrastructure expertise, operating at scale. So it's kind of expensive luxury to have a DevOps team. And then having them grow faster than the rest of the engineering is also a concern, because technically DevOps does not create value for customers. So you have your software engineers that building your applications. So application delivers certain capabilities and benefits. So that's value that customers are paying for. That's fantastic. So you want more of that. But DevOps team essentially just makes sure that whatever the rest of engineering builds, that it runs. It doesn't go down. It doesn't get hacked. It doesn't get slow. They catch bugs sometimes. So why would that be growing faster than the rest of the organization? And I've always had the opinion that even the fact that we have DevOps is a sign that cloud computing is broken, because historically we didn't always have them. So for example, when first computers appeared in the 50s and 60s, you had famously like people walking around these computers, like replacing vacuum tubes and cleaning them up. Those are early DevOps teams, because technology was early. It was kind of flaky. It was bad. But then we improved and computers got smaller and smaller and they got super reliable. You didn't need these people anymore. So if you look at your iPhone, it runs by itself without any DevOps people, even though in terms of computational power, it's probably comparable to a supercomputer from 30, 50 years ago. So therefore, the future of cloud computing is similar to an iPhone. Like I always felt that you should get a cloud account. You should point your cloud account at your code and say, go run this code for me, and just go to bed. You don't need DevOps teams. So what is that difference? Why do we need DevOps teams right now, and what is missing for us to go into this bright future where software runs itself in the cloud? That's what I was obsessed about. And in my opinion, the missing piece of technology is an operating system, because that's what we did last time. So again, going back to 50s and 60s, like early computers did not have an operating system. So you basically had a bunch of people doing things manually in order to run applications. And as we moved to the cloud, then we lost the operating system. The concept of operating system is not there really. And that causes all kinds of problems. So essentially what DevOps teams are doing, they're building and maintaining custom operating system for these custom cloud computers that every organization has. I'm not sure if your audience is following, but I'm sure technical people do. And that's what I decided to build. I figured we should start a company that builds an operating system for the cloud. And the use case that we wanted to go to is like, hey, let's go and see where the current model of cloud computing breaks. And we identified where it's completely broken already is a situation where we have computing environments where DevOps teams cannot operate. Let's just say you want to sell a piece of software, a very complicated cloud software, to like a bank or insurance company, and they want to deploy your software in a basement. And in that basement, your DevOps team will not have access to it. So how do you do that? So that was our first use case. We figured we'll start a company that helps organizations to deploy and run applications in these highly regulated environments that DevOps team cannot follow. And then we expand from this use case to more general use case and bring the future without DevOps teams into the present. So as we started to build the solution, as you can imagine, it's incredibly complex. So essentially, you're building a piece of software that replaces like an entire like a piece of an organization. So it took us a lot of time. So we're basically coding in a cave for first couple of years. And then we started to sell the resulting solution. It was called Gravity. And the thinking was, like, we called it Gravity because without gravity, the world is chaos, right? Things are flying around, and gravity kind of is one of the fundamental forces in physics. So it kind of brings the order in the world of software. And the company is actually called Gravitational. And very quickly, we run into this use case of having all these remote environments that are highly regulated and hard to get to, but you still need to push code updates to them. So you need to have some kind of access to these environments. So that's the problem we had to solve with Gravity. And it felt absolutely normal because, if you remember, I wanted to build an operating system for the cloud, and every single operating system has a built-in access control. In fact, there is a famous, well, it used to be famous, like Orange Book. You could read about it on Wikipedia. It's called Criteria of Trustworthiness of Computing Systems. It's about how to evaluate access control built into an operating system. And that's what Teleport was. So we built Teleport as an access control for Gravity, and we put it on GitHub. We made it open source, and the original thought was, hey, engineers love to hack on interesting problems, and they like to work on software that's in the open. We didn't want to open source all of our solution, but we decided we're just going to open source Teleport. And then if you fast forward a couple of years, it started to get noticed by other people, because apparently the problem of access control is much more visible to most organizations. Like every single DevOps team out there probably built and is maintaining a homegrown solution, some kind of contraption. Like sometimes it's as simple as SSH jump host. Sometimes it's more complex kind of gateway. But almost every organization is building in-house access control for their clouds. And that's what people started to notice. And that's why they started to come to us and started to ask, can I just buy Teleport separately from Gravity? And we said, sure. And that's how we ended up with a two-product situation. For about a year, I would say, that probably would be 2018, like we had two products and both of them were growing. Teleport was smaller and cheaper. Gravity was bigger and more expensive. So we would sell more of Teleport in terms of logos, but in terms of revenue, they were like 50-50. So it was that was the kind of head-scratching moment when we found ourselves like, what do we do now? Because running two, selling two very different products is actually very taxing for a small company.
And did you have VCs on board at this time? So when you got to that stage with Teleport and Gravity, had you had VC investment? And then were they providing some advice like, hey, guys, you need to focus on one or the other?
No. When we found ourselves in this situation, some people would say, hey, it's a good problem to have. You managed to have built two products with traction. But it was already pretty obvious that if we wanted to continue to be successful, one of them had to go. It's just not sustainable. However, because our name and our success were started to be visible, kind of, I would get VCs come in and essentially push me, like, go and start fundraising. We were actually pretty close to being profitable around that point. And that's when I raised money from Kleiner Perkins. So when Bucky Moore, partner at Kleiner, when he joined us, he was actually very, like, he was not. So he took this position like, hey, guys, you came up with these two things. Both of them seem to be working. It's really kind of up to you to figure out what he, like, see, he did not push us towards one outcome or another. And he was extremely supportive with whatever decision we wanted to make. So yes, VCs eventually joined right at that time. It was Kleiner. And what resolved this kind of analysis paralysis situation was COVID. So when COVID started to happen, even before all these lockdowns, we just noticed an increased interest in Teleport. And that's really where we decided to make the decision. So COVID was kind of like a triggering event.
Okay. And so I was going to ask about the decision-making process of like, where do we go, you know, Gravity or Teleport? But given that you had this sort of like macro event, which was COVID, and that started to drive, as you say, or accelerate a little bit around Teleport, was it as simple as that in terms of like, okay, let's, we're going to focus on teleport, and then we have to figure out what we're going to do with gravity.
So I think if you're asking me why we decided to keep teleport as a product and sunset gravity, I would, so there are two really important components. Like, first was total addressable market. So what was and still is amazing about teleport, and it's very similar to Mailgun, my previous company, is that every single organization that writes code needs access control for data centers, for the clouds. Quite literally, every single organization in the world is potential customer of teleport because every single organization writes code. Manufacturing, insurance, obviously SaaS companies, like every industry writes code now. So the total addressable market is huge. Gravity, that was our kind of original baby, original vision. It was much, much more ambitious, but it was also a little bit ahead of its time. So there are not a lot of organizations right now out there with budget for cloud operating system. So the time for that will come. I'm still quite sure of that. And the second consideration was just like the cost of building and maintaining. Gravity was complex, and it had a pretty sizable engineering team on it at the time. Versus teleport was, we maybe had two, three full-time engineers working on it. And it was, in terms of revenue, doing just as well as gravity. So those two factors combined made the decision pretty kind of easy to do, I think.
Are you a software company struggling to navigate the complex world of payments? We get it. Getting paid should be simple, but as you grow, it gets complicated. Different currencies, payment methods, regulations, and taxes. It's enough to make anyone's head spin, but Paddle's got your back. We handle tax, payments, billing, subscriptions, fraud, and so much more all across the globe. Paddle does the heavy lifting so you can focus on what really matters, your products and your growth. Get started at paddle.com.
I think, like you said, it's probably not a... in some ways, and people would view it, not a bad position to be in, where you've got two companies that are both generating revenue, and you're nearing or breaking profitability. But obviously, I would say just the common advice that everybody sees, hears, reads is when you're starting out, is to really just focus, and focus is kind of key, right? Given that, and then you decided to focus then on teleport, which obviously definitely seems to be the right decision. What would be, in your view, maybe a couple of takeaways or lessons, perhaps, for those that are listening, to how to not end up in that situation where in a similar situation?
You know what? Look, I'm not going to lie, and I will say this is not a bad situation to be in. You have two products, both of them have traction. So if you got into that situation, look, congrats. Congrats. Maybe I could speak more about how to get out of that situation as quickly as possible, because we faced multiple choices. One was, why don't we just sell Gravity? Just split the company in half and just find an acquirer. And the interesting thing is that there were a couple of Gravity customers who wanted to acquire us. So they were reaching out to me. And this is actually one time, it was maybe one of the first examples where I got a word of wisdom from my board. I told them that I could get between 10 and 30 million for Gravity, because I already had corp dev teams reaching out, and they were even putting some numbers verbally into my ear. And the board said, hey, just don't worry about it. We need to move fast. And I was like, well, these people are not interested in extra $10 to $30 million because selling company itself is a distraction. So if I were to actually go and sell Gravity separately, splitting company in half, doing all of that, going through due diligence, it would probably consume 6 to 8 months at least, which means that this whole time I would not be focusing on teleport. Some other people would also not be focusing on teleport, and the role of a startup is to compress time for investors, really. So you shouldn't be doing that. So my advice for those who end up in this situation, when evaluating options for getting out of it, pick the fastest one. You need to be in this focus state as quickly as you can. So And because almost all advice is very contextual, so I don't know the context of a potential listener who will they will find themselves in. So the fastest option, that's my advice, because you need to get back into building, talking to customers, selling and supporting.
Awesome. Well, I guess sort of congrats on making the right decision and then focusing on Teleport and scaling that business. And conscious of time, so I'm going to move into the quickish fire round now, Ev. What one thing has moved the needle the most for you in your career?
My location. So moving from Russia to United States and then moving to Silicon Valley, moving to New York, every single move opened up a lot of positive randomness that allowed me to get to where I am.
What about, I know you've just given some advice in the previous sort of question, but what's the best advice you've ever received?
I think that was, it was a head of marketing for a very well-known company. Because when I raised my venture capital for the first time, I got access to like just amazing people. And one of the first conversations, I was kind of learning how to do sales and marketing properly. Someone said, you need to mimic how your customers behave. Your entire organization needs to be like a mirror in front of a prospect. That is the fastest, low friction way to be for your product to be adopted. A lot of advice expires quickly. This one I've heard about 4 or 5 years ago, and it's incredibly accurate, and I will continue sticking to it. Mimic your customer behavior.
Yep. Thanks for sharing that. What about, is there a biggest failure you've made or any lesson learned around that?
It's a kind of failure mode. I cannot pinpoint like exact decision. It was just like absolutely catastrophic. And I think most intelligent people will have probably difficulty with this because like we never make obviously bad decisions. Like every single decision seems rational in the moment, but there is like a certain trend. And the one thing that keeps biting me is ignoring complexity for too long. Eventually, I self-correct and I just realize, hey, the business is getting more complicated. The product is getting more complicated. The way we sell is getting more complicated. And every time I kind of catch myself, like I should have thought about this 6 months ago. Now it's too complicated. So letting complexity creep in is just awful. Just don't do that.
What about hardest thing about being a CEO?
Just being alone. I think it's well-known standard advice. Everyone will probably tell you that.
Yeah, no, definitely. I heard it many times and also understand as a solo founder, CEO myself. What about your favorite book on business and why?
Quite frequently, I would read a business book and I'm thinking, this now is my favorite book. So then some time passes. And I reverse back to the original, my favorite business book. And that would be a 0 to 1 to 1 by Peter Thiel. And it's just an extremely well-structured, fun to read. And it's just, it's compatible to how I think. And I do believe it's actually quite a practical manual, how to start a company.
Yeah, good stuff. And as we wrap up, Ev, like we mentioned that you will be joining us at SaaS.USA in May from the 13th to the 15th, which is in Austin at the Palmer Event Center. So super excited for that. You'll be joined by Mary D'Onofrio from Bessemer Venture Partners. What are you speaking about? What are you looking forward to? Have you been to Austin before? Any tips?
So first of all, Austin is my American hometown. I spent more time in Austin than anywhere else. Like really looking forward to get back. And I will be actually speaking about the pivot that we've executed. So going from Gravity to Teleport, or going from the operating system for the internet to access control for the internet. Yeah, looking forward to be there. Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. Well, looking forward to that. Ev, where can people find you online if before hopefully meeting you in person at SaaS.USA? What's the best place to reach out to if they have any questions about you or Teleport?
That's probably... I would send them to x.com, Kant Savoy, my last name. I'm not an active poster on social media, but it's easy to find me there.
Good stuff. All right. Well, great stuff, Ev. I'm really looking forward to seeing you in Austin in May. Thanks so much for being a great guest on the SaaS Revolution show today. Ev Kant Savoy, CEO of Teleport.
Thank you for having me here. Had a good time.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the SaaS Revolution show. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you learned something from it, check out sasdoc.com/events to find all the upcoming SaaS.conferences around the world. Want exclusive SaaS content and actionable insights to grow your SaaS? Join our community of over 36,000 SaaS founders at saasdoc.com.